On this episode of Breaking the Panel, it is spoiler-filled about Star Wars Episode 7. If you've not seen the movie, you're going to want to get out, much like many people did halfway through the film. But if you want to know what that means, you have to listen to the show. So coming up next is going to be full of Star Wars spoilers, in-depth reviews, our take on it, and our experiences. So stay tuned.
The comic book now owns pop culture, and that's a worldwide phenomenon. Film, television, literature, even music. These days, it's all about the comics.
I am Arrow.
I'm Batman.
Supergirl?
What does S.H.I.E.L.D. stand for, Agent Ward?
I am Iron Man.
And I am Spider-Man.
Hulk. Smash.
We're living the comics life. We're breaking the panel.
So, hey, this is Breaking the Panel. I am Ebbett Boss McFall coming along for the ride today. This is Star Wars weekend. It will forever and always be known as Star Wars Christmas. It happened the weekend right before Christmas in 2015. Episode 7 dropped and crushed all kinds of records. But who gives a crap about the numbers? Seriously, I don't care how much money they made. I wanted to know that it was going to bring the experience back to me. Coming along to discuss that with me is Coming along to discuss that with me is the beloved Paul Klotz.
Hey, that's the first way you introduced me. That's my space name.
Blah, 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 blah.
that's my name on Mon Calamari.
I hope I pronounced it correctly.
No, you did. You did very well.
So, and filling in for Brian Ibbett. Now, see, Brian Ibbett, he got invited to a show. Well, actually, not invited. He's a part of a show called Film Sack. And they weren't going to have another chance to do a good edition of that show this year, this calendar year. So he ended up doing it last night. He told me earlier today they did a two-hour Film Sack on this Star Wars. So He was exhausted and ready to go. So filling in his shoes today is the none other than Chris Wisdom.
May the force be with all of us today.
Or something. Or some midichlorians. I'll take some of that too.
No, get out of here.
Okay, so on that note.
There's the door.
On that note, I was so happy to see that they retconned the crap out of that and brought it right back. The force just surrounds us and flows around and flow. I was like, thank you for that, JJ. Thank you for fixing that back. We appreciate you, sir.
Like a drunk uncle, if you just ignore them. They no longer exist.
So we're going to start with our experiences. Now, Klotz, you've been multiple times. I went once, and we'll talk about it later. I don't know how many times Chris has gone.
Just once so far.
All right. So you went on preview day, really is what they call it. Opening day is technically Friday, but many theaters were able to run this starting Thursday evening / afternoon. So what was your experience like?
Okay, well, I did go Thursday at 7 o'clock, which was the first showing for my local theater. Walking in, we got there at around 5:30. We wanted to make sure we were there early enough to get good seats and everything. Fortunately, my local theater is a nice stadium seating style theater that is comfortable and has, pretty much 90% every seat in the house is a good seat. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Except for the very front seats, like right below the screen, because those are the breakneck ones where you essentially have to become an invertebrate to enjoy the film. So we get there and the lobby is packed. I mean, I live in a small city that this is our only theater in town, and it's a decent size, but it's not huge. Lobby is packed. They have at least four showings on each side. We were going to see 3D. So there were two 3D showings on our side as well as two others. And so we stood in line for a while, and they let us in relatively early. I mean, I think they were really well prepared for this. So shout out to the Marquee Cinema here in New Hartford, New York, because they killed it. It was comfortable and everything. It was a little warm in the theater, but that's to be expected when you pile people in like cattle. Okay.
Right.
So, you know, the overall vibe was people were excited. I mean, like I said, I live in a small city, so I saw a lot of familiar faces. We had a lot of friends that were there. I saw a lot of people that from different like nerdy circles that I know that I hadn't seen in a while, you know, previous jobs, stuff like that. And, you know, the nerd elite of my small little town pretty much turned out for this.
Was anybody in costume? Did they bring out their lightsabers and stuff?
There was a little bit of costumes. I don't think I saw a single lightsaber. There might have been one. I don't think they were technically allowed, but I'm not sure. We didn't ever really check with the theater. But there were some people in costumes. There was a stormtrooper in full getup. That was pretty cool. But probably the best costume was who I like to refer to as like Uncle Chewbacca. This was a gentleman who was wearing, as he put it, a $35 Halloween costume for Chewbacca.
Okay.
That was essentially a cloth, you know, the cheesy cloth costume with like, you know, it's colored, but it's like got nothing on it. And the most hideous plastic Chewbacca mask. But he was a good sport because he kept doing his horrific Wookiee roar. Exactly.
Yeah.
He kept doing it over and over again. And as a matter of fact, he ended up sitting two rows directly in front of me. So sitting on the aisle seat. So he's sitting two rows in front of me for my showing. And we're sitting there, you know, this is kind of before previews and everything. Like it's doing the theater reel, you know, the advertisements and whatnot. And he kind of stands up and he goes, anybody else dress up like me or am I the only kook around here? And everybody just kind of looks at him a little bit and just, you know, whatever. But he was having fun with it, you know. He would wear the mask sometimes, take the mask off other times, everything. No sooner did he really say that than some kid walked in, comes around the corner with a Pikachu hat on. Like, and when I say kid, I mean an adult, like a man-child. wearing a Pikachu. And he goes, Pikachu, and he roars, and then everybody like claps and cheers for Pikachu. What? And that should give you the slightest hint of the vibe of this crowd. This crowd was ready to see Star Wars. Okay,
no kidding.
You know, we fast forward to the movie starts, you know, you get the initial crawl, cheers, clapping, the whole nine yards. People are excited. Throughout the film, at like every moment when a classic character makes their first appearance, applause and cheering and horrific Chewbacca roar.
Which I'm assuming you enjoy that kind of atmosphere, and it seems like it could be fun. That's exactly why I didn't go opening day, just because I'd rather not experience that. Even though it's fun, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just not my cup of tea, so I'm glad.
Well, see, I like it for something like this, you know, once in a while, but I would hate that if that's how every movie was. But I mean, it's Star Wars, man. Like,
it's Star Wars. It almost makes the environment safe that you can go ahead and be that 10-year-old kid again.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, everybody was just having a good time. That was really the whole thing. Until everybody's having a good time until we start getting to the, you know, the meat of the second and third acts where things start to get real and things start to happen and our heartstrings start getting plucked eloquently by Mr. Abrams and his wonderfully talented crew. That's when you start seeing stuff like grown men crying and weeping next to you in the theater or around you. Fortunately, now, going on a Thursday at 7, there really weren't a ton of kids in my showing. It was mostly adults with a few kids here and there. So there was no, like, complaining or anything like that or just, like, you know, shenanigans. It was just, you know, people cheered when the people came on and stuff. There was the occasional bad Wookiee roar. But it was, you know, it was a crowd that was engaged. Now, the reason I bring all this up is because I went again on Saturday at the first showing Saturday afternoon, and the atmosphere was decidedly different. It was very somber and very quiet, and apparently that's what the showing that McFall would have been comfortable in. Because, yeah, there was – people were just kind of like – even at, like, the best parts in the movie, there was, like, no cheering, no clapping, no nothing.
Yeah.
Just like, you know. Though it was so quiet that during the some of the big reveals and some of the, you know, the twists and turns, you got to hear like literal hushes and like the gasps and stuff like that. And oh, no, you know,
right.
Stuff like that. So it was cool. I guess I'll just transition here. What was the showing experience for you guys first before we move on to our overall impressions?
What about you, Chris?
Well, my theater, I went on Friday afternoon. I had a few people in Cosmos in Kansas City, in the Kansas City metro area at a 3D IMAX showing where I went and did it up the right way, I feel. Few people in costume, most everybody had some sort of Star Wars memorabilia. I don't know about your theaters. Mine was an AMC, so they had like a merch booth right out front. So they were hawking sweatshirts and hoodies and t-shirts, hats and all sorts of stuff. That was kind of cool to see the swag there at the theater. I went in my Boba Fett faux 5950 cap. The atmosphere was really good. It applause and all those exact same points that you were talking about, Paul, at the beginning of with the crawl, at the every time an old character showed up, but conspicuously no applause at the end of the movie, which I thought was odd.
I didn't find that the end of the movie was applause a moment. I thought it was a very good, moment.
Yeah.
So,
I remember episode one. I still remember applause at the end of that movie. And if that can draw applause, then surely.
Sure. I don't. Yeah. So, I am definitely the outside moment of this. I don't like elbow to elbow theaters. I've done it. It's needed. Sometimes it's necessary. Had I had the true opportunity to go maybe Friday night where it still wouldn't have packed, I would have done it. I think I'm not a Scrooge. I think that had I been in the situation where people were applauding and this and that, I would have gotten into it. But yeah, my preferred method is to just absorb and open myself up and experience it. And any noise and distraction takes that away from me a little bit. So I definitely like the somber stuff. I took my two oldest kids, who are 10 and 9, who did watch 4, 5, and 6. They've been watching 1, 2, and 3 all their lives because they're given DVDs of it. But I got the Blu-rays here this past couple months or whatever, and 4, 5, and 6. I've been catching them up and explaining how everything works right. And even before I get started, my daughter, Crosby, says, "Is that girl, is she Princess Leia's daughter?" I said, "Well, I don't know." And this is before the movie even rolls, right? I said, "I don't know because according to the books that were written after the movies, there were twins and this and that and the other. Who knows what they're going to do?" And to that point, we actually don't have definitive answers on how that goes. But, we go to 3D. Now, we're trying to go to 3D IMAX, and I read the site wrong, apparently. Or actually, I think their site was just listed wrong because they had 3D and 3D IMAX, and that was it to choose from. And it's one at 10 p.m., one at 10:30 p.m. So I said, okay, we're going to go to the IMAX because I haven't been to IMAX in forever. So I really wanted to see this on the huge screen. And we'll go to – and, of course – it's not that huge of an area, so I walk in expecting tickets to be available for what I wanted, and they were for the 10 and 10:30 of regular 3D, but IMAX was all sold out. I don't think it was even running that late. I think they just changed things up, but it doesn't matter. So we get the 3D, and we go in, and for the record, though, you guys should know, I pretty much got to do this thing for practically free. I ended up upgrading to 3D glasses, and we went and got 3 large drinks and a popcorn for a grand total of $15.
Whoa.
Wow.
There.
Because my wife does the Coke points, and those are gold tickets. So they're like cash tickets. And then she had done something with Marlboro. And they have, without even having to buy cigarettes or anything with Marlboro, you can just go on their site and enter contests. And she gets free stuff from them all the time. So we had a $13 movie ticket from them. And it all worked out very nicely. So $15 for the family of four to go do this.
That's awesome.
My wife doesn't really like 3D, and I do when it's done right, and my kids are getting used to it. And as soon as the scroll hit in 3D, right, she leans over and she's like, "Okay, that was really awesome. It's much, the words are much better in 3D." And of course, the Star Destroyer at one point where it pops out is just sticking out of the screen at you. That was
like
a lot
20 of fun. Feet out of the screen.
Right? Yeah, I know, right? My wife actually giggled at that one. But, yeah, we had our moments. She would whisper little things to me. The kids would ask stuff every once in a while. But for the most part, the entire theater just absorbed it. And I got to say, just to lead up to part of our experience, the practical effects are amazing. And when the bowcaster, man, shoots a single stormtrooper and they flip backwards like 20 feet, there was a moment when my wife and I both at the same time were like, "Oh, shit." That was awesome. but coming out, man, there was no big, oh my God, it was just like, I'm spent. You know, Luke was mm-hmm. there, and it makes me, when I read this book, I mentioned it to Klotz and Ibbett a while back, or maybe on the last episode, I can't remember when or where I mentioned it to him, but there was a book called Dreadnought that came out, and it's set just after the 4, 5, and 6 are done, and it's, the theory was, what I can remember, it's been decades since I've read it, but the theory was that there's a secret set of ships that are made from some, you know, made up metal, blah, 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 but they're infused with the Force. So it was basically a Jedi could sit in the captain's seat of the main Dreadnought ship, and you'd have 6 or 8 other ships that had nobody on it. And the Jedi through the Force would control all of them as a fleet.
Black Fleet Crisis.
Okay.
That's the book series you're talking about.
All right.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, because there's like the Witches of Endor, and Luke goes off to find the mysterious Witches of Endor, which in this movie they talked about going off to find the first Jedi Temple. So there's a lot of that experience. I got to say, my experience was just, I left, and 20 minutes later, I'm going, I think I have to go see that again, because I need to absorb more. You can only absorb so much on the first pass. So, Klaus, that brings us full circle back to you. You went the second time. I know you already talked about experience, but did you see more in the film going a second time?
Yes, dude. Oh, man. That's what I've been telling people, is you have to go see it a second time. Now, here's the thing about seeing it twice in the theater. Like, you know, when you become comfortable with something and you start going back through it to look for things you missed, you won't always just find things that you like. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And we're going to get to that a little later. But basically, the second pass through really, for me, like it helped me fill in a few gaps, especially because the first time I went, I drank too much soda and I had to go pee 3 times.
Oh, no.
Yeah, dude. It was brutal. Like, as a matter of fact,
that's a filthy casual right there. You should know better than to drink at a movie.
One of the times I had to go, it was right. I left just as Rey was climbing down the wall in the base.
Yeah.
And when Han like is looking at her, and, you know, Finn is just kind of like, what's this? Yeah.
Why are you doing this with your chin? Why are you doing that?
So I left right then, not realizing that I was going to walk in basically when Han and Kylo are on the bridge.
Oh.
And I'm just like, I sit down and my roommate goes, his name is Ben. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I'm back. All right, let's go. So, yeah, you pick up a lot more the second time through. But, you know, you see some of the nods, you see some of the Easter eggs that you might have missed the first pass. You catch some more of the dialogue, that kind of stuff. But you also kind of start to notice some of the, I guess I would say, flaws. You start to see some of the cracks and some of the spots where, you know, things were, you know, whatever. We'll get to that, because I really want to dig into that. We haven't talked about overall impression.
True.
When everybody came out of the theater, the vibe was generally positive, but because there were lines for more showings at that time, because this was Thursday night, everybody was like being very tight-lipped until they got outside.
Good. Very good.
But almost everybody who walked through those doors had a positive attitude, and they were excited and happy. And a lot of people were like high-fiving each other and talking to each other and stuff like that. And obviously, you know, the elephant in the room is everybody was talking about Han's death.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
You know, some people shocked by it, some people not surprised at all, other people like really conflicted.
50-50.
Yeah, exactly. It ran the gamut. You know what I mean? Like, there were tons of different responses to it, which I found really interesting and good. My overall impression was, when the first showing, I absolutely loved it. I had a great time. I am not blind to some of its weaknesses, but I thought that, if to me, I walked out and I texted my sister and I said, JJ did it. He saved Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because I really feel like, more than anything else, this gives us a clean slate to start moving forward. Mm-hmm. And I think now this is going to be a good opportunity for JJ and his team to get a lot of really good feedback as they shape the second and third films. I know they're in production now for the second film already. Mm-hmm. We got about 18 months or so to wait for that. But I think this is going to give them a tremendous opportunity to really respond to what people say now. And it'll allow them to really flesh out and develop the following two films. So in that respect, I can forgive a lot that we're going to talk about later. But I really enjoyed it. Like, I loved, I felt like everybody was on board. You know, I don't feel like any of the performances were really phoned in. You know, I feel like everybody wanted to be there. And, yeah. You know what I mean? And some of the reveals were great. Like, I was a little disappointed when they first showed R2 because I thought we weren't going to see R2 in this episode. Or, yeah, exactly, in this episode.
You said it right.
That actually works with these movies. you know, I was like, oh, man, if they don't have R2 at all this episode, that's going to be a heartbreaker. But I'm willing to bet that they're probably going to have him, like, activate towards the end. Now, we had talked.
I kind of assumed he went with Luke for a while until they pulled the cloth off.
Yeah. Well, now, we had talked in our speculation episode, and we had talked way back when we saw the trailer in the summertime that about different possibilities. And I had said back then that I thought Luke would show up in the second or third act, and I was wrong. I was dead wrong because clearly he only shows up in the very final scene.
Technically, he shows up in the second act when she has the flashback. But
technically.
Flash forward. We don't know. See, that's the other thing. We don't know if it's all flash forwards, flashbacks. I mean, there's both.
But the point stands that, so, okay, now we know why he isn't on the poster. Now we know why he's not in any of the advertising, really, because he's literally just going to turn around, which I thought was the flipping coolest thing.
Right!
I loved the big Luke reveal. Like, because we know it's him. We know he's standing there.
And honestly, he as he got older, and he didn't look that great to start with. Okay, he was no GQ Man of the Year or anything. So I was afraid, like, oh, man, kind of in his older age, he really, really, really looks rough. And they turned around, and they had the beard. I was like, oh, that makes him look good. And he flips that thing off, and he's got wild man hair. I was like, wow, that really looks awesome.
He had his 70s hair back. I was like, hell yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was great. I thought he looked awesome. I loved the color of his robes, and I loved the big reveal. The look on his face, man. The gravitas, you know what I mean? Like, just like,
that whole reveal was worth the wait, too.
Oh, totally.
No problem with him being in the last scene of the movie because what we got was perfect.
Exactly. There were a lot of other moments that I loved. Like, I some people don't like it, but I loved the when Finn and Rey are running away and they're running towards the jumper, and he's like, what about that one? And she's like, that's garbage.
Trash. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they turn and it's the Falcon. Like, some people think that's cheesy, but I thought it was great.
I thought it was cool. And I was like, immediately in my head, I'm like, how the hell did they get that? Lando promised to return it with no scratches. What the hell is it doing there? and then, of course, they do talk about that a little bit. So we can get into details. My overall opinion was, man, it is so beautiful. It was so dirty, and I loved every second of it. I mean, there's sand on everything. There's dirt marks. There's not one clean spot except for C-3PO in the whole damn movie.
Are you
movie.
Trying to say it gets in everywhere and in its core?
Once you get it in, you can't get it out.
And we didn't find shit. I kept thinking of that through the whole movie, the Spaceballs thing, where he's combing the desert. And every time I was like, well, we didn't find the droid. I'm like, you mean we didn't find shit? That's what you mean to say.
Okay. So the combing the desert scene.
Right.
The second time I saw it, the first time I thought of that scene when he pops up, you know, after the crash.
Right.
The second time I saw it, I laughed out loud because I just envisioned the guys with the comb in the background.
you have to go there. You can't not go there. But it was just so gorgeous. I mean, and 3D was the way to go. I felt like I was on the Falcon. I felt like I was everywhere they were. You know, the flying scenes, the walking scenes, the talking scenes. I just felt so immersed in this movie that the only way it could be more immersive if, you know, they invent the holodeck and you actually get to play one of the character roles in this thing, right? But that was my general impression was, it brought me back to episode four.
If they invent the holodeck, do you think they'll ever allow you to go explore Star Wars on it?
God, probably not. They're like, that dude's banned. He's going to be banging all the robots. It's not cool, man. I don't know. Wow.
That's where he was going.
No. But I mean, you know, every once in a while, there you are.
Robot chicken. So the immersiveness of it, it was so just beautiful. I just found myself over and over going, that's great. And I love that it went back to the roots of Ford. There was no over explaining anything. It was, here's the story as it's been told. You know, here's the scroll, right? Here's what's going on right now. And boom, you're right in the middle of the story and you have no idea what's going on. You don't know why you're on this planet. You don't know why you're with that character. You don't know why you're with this other character other than he's the best pilot in the thing and he's going to get some intel. That's it. And all of a sudden, stormtroopers there and stuff's going. I love that. Expect me to be smart. Expect that I'll figure out the pieces and I'll tie it together myself as we go along. That was glorious. And that was that. You know, Chris, what about you?
Yeah. Overall, I was super happy. I mean, I think nostalgia for the win is just the easiest way to put that down. It took me back to when I was 10, the first time I saw that movie. It wasn't in a theater, or the first time that it had an impactful meaning to me. I mean, I've been watching the movie since I was 3 or 4, just never in a theater until, you know, 97 when these special editions re-released. Feels. Every up that he wanted you to feel, you felt it. Every down, you felt it. Every time you were supposed to applaud, people were applauding, and every time that you were supposed to roll a tear, I had 70 of them coming out of my eyes. He did his job. The film was beautiful, like you said. I mean, he gave you those stunning visuals. See, when George Lucas talks about, I never got to do the film that I wanted to do because the technology wasn't there, this is what I envisioned. Not Phantom Menace, not the overuse of technology and computers that the prequels gave us, but this movie right here, I think, is what he had in mind. It took me back to when those movies seemed simpler because of the practical effects, and it wasn't like this guy was trying to swing for the fences or give us what he thought we wanted. I think is probably one of his biggest failures too. He was very influenced by the fans, I think, more so than people would like to admit. We had a lot to do with the failures of the prequels. My biggest hurdle that I had to deal with going to that movie was the no foreplay. When you go see a Star Wars movie, there are 20 seconds of foreplay that you know you want, that it was very noticeable that they weren't there. And all of a sudden I'm looking, the trailers ended, and all of a sudden I just see that sparkling Lucasfilm Limited thing. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I guess we're starting the movie now.
Mm-hmm. So what foreplay would you be talking about?
The Fox fanfare.
Yeah.
Got to have it. It was so, and I guess I,
that's not on the DVDs, so I didn't notice.
You didn't notice it wasn't there then. Yeah, no. It didn't bother you as much, but yeah, it did. It's,
I gotcha.
Yeah.
It is crazy how something like that can become, like, you know, tied to your experience with those films, you know. We can't have the fanfare though because it's a Disney film, you know, right. Like, yep. You can't just slap Fox on it, you know, because we like a little bit of music and it totally has a different impact.
Now,
it really does.
Now, they probably couldn't have done it. Legally, they probably couldn't have done it. But, you know, it'd been fun. Since you don't actually slap the Fox fanfare on there, but to have R2-D2 kind of roll through whistling it. You know, it'd be
something. Yeah, give me a couple notes. But, and I think some of the, you know, the little nostalgia bits were nice. Like, when they are repairing the Falcon, when they're running and they're tossing through all the spare parts and stuff.
Yes.
And Finn grabs the practice.
Yes. Yes. Troy, the battle ball. Yes.
All right. Yeah. There you go.
Yes. And I laughed and my wife's like, what? I said, that's the practice droid for Luke. She's like, oh yeah. Okay. Got it. Yep. Yeah. Although a much better scene was right before that when she's pointing at the thing and then Father BB-8 had to like put his eye glass piece on it for him to grab it. That was awesome.
Now all of that said, the only thing that I felt was when I walked out of that movie, I didn't have any, it wasn't that I was spent. I was done thinking about the film. I didn't take anything with me out of the film. It was all left on the field, but not because I was out of emotion. I don't know. It was weird. I spent the last few days just trying to figure out what collect my thoughts about this movie, because I'm like, this isn't how I should have felt walking out of that theater.
I actually expected to feel. I remember what it was like when Independence Day, 1984, you know, came out, and I remember leaving that, and even Jurassic Park, even Jurassic World this last time, leaving it going, oh, man, that was so awesome, and I'd love to buy it right now. And I, you know, and mm-hmm. I'm with you because I left going, that was epic. I mean, it was epic. It was just this ride of emotions and just embracing the story. But I left feeling different than I expected. I expected to have that rush. And maybe, honestly, maybe that's a testament to how good the movie was. Was you didn't get a false rush of emotions. You actually experienced something maybe deeper.
Mm. Well, my take on it is, hey, Chris, are you good to pass a torch here?
Yep. No, yeah, but go ahead.
Okay. I just didn't want to cut you off if you had more thoughts. I think, so the first big commentary I can make about the film is it is lean. And what I mean by that is, there's not a lot of juicy, fatty bits on this. You know what I mean? There's you start in quick, the film moves quick the entire time, and you're out quick. Like, there's never really any time to kind of like sit and like catch your breath
right.
and like, or, you know, start to think about things.
And everything's important. Everything's important.
Well, and that's the thing, though, is everything is so important, and there is no exposition for almost anything. Like, it's like you said, everything is just shown to you, and it's like, and I'm with you on the fact that I like smart movies that raise a lot of questions and let you try to answer them yourself. I think that's a sign of a great film that will stand the test of time generally.
Right.
I think that's like, for example, the Aliens films and the Predator films, the early ones in both cases. They really pick at your brain. You know, you walk out of the theater or you walk out of the first time you see those and you think about it and you imagine yourself in that world and you try to imagine you just go through all these scenarios. You know what I mean? And you're curious about like, where did they come from? What's going on? All that stuff. And Star Wars scratches that same itch for a lot of people. I know that's what got me into it when I was a teenager, you know, I was like 11 or 12 when I first got into Star Wars. And, you know, that's kind of missing from this film. There's not a lot of, you know, those grisly bits to start chewing on for a little while, which is a little bit unfortunate because I almost got the impression, you know, in the way that Avengers Age of Ultron had, like, it felt like things were missing because we know things hit the editing, you know, the cutting room floor because he had to cut an hour from the film. I felt like something very similar happened here. I feel like, I know JJ does exposition. I know he does build up and set up and, like, you know, basically he dangles the carrot and some of the other work that he's done before. So I was very surprised to see none of that here. And like it's as a Star Wars fan, I'm pretty key. Like, I'm a pretty big Star Wars fan. I'm pretty keyed in to the expanded universe and some of the background stuff, and it definitely the stuff that is in on-screen film canon. I'm familiar with, you know what I mean, for various reasons. Mm-hmm. So when I walk out of the theater and I have some serious questions about how we got here that haven't been answered yet, that kind of I'm like, well, what's going on here? One of the big ones for me that stood out was the Battle of Jakku. Like, the film never addresses why there's a Star Destroyer on this planet.
To me, that's the Clone Wars. You know, they mention the Clone Wars. They reference the Clone Wars in passing in 4, 5, and 6, but you don't see it. And you actually don't see the Clone Wars in between 3 and 4.
Right.
Battle of Jakku was post-Return.
It is post-Return.
And that's...
Yeah.
But I think that just goes back to what Mel Brooks said, merchandise. You want to know what happened to Jakku, you need to buy that, buy Battlefront.
Right.
And get DLC.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Well, even then, though, like Battlefront, it's, you know, multiplayer, you know, shoot 'em up. So it's right. not like you're getting deep story from that.
Exactly.
And I wanted to understand, like, how that got there. How did we get a Star Destroyer on the surface of this planet?
And I haven't read Aftermath. Does it address it in Aftermath?
Not completely. It's referenced, but and I still have to read Aftermath myself. I do have it sitting behind me here. But that's the thing, though. Like, we're talking about films. You know, the films are the backbone of this franchise.
Yes.
And some of this stuff has to be fleshed out on screen, in my opinion. So I really hope that JJ takes some of the feedback that's getting thrown out there, because I know this is one of the things that gets brought up, and decides to take a few moments to expand on a few of the things that they're throwing out there going forward, so that I like having questions, but I also want a few answers once in a while, you know? And that's an issue that we face with television series sometimes, you know, the ones that raise more questions than they ever answer. It can get frustrating when it reaches a certain, you know, maximum threshold. But in this case, it's just the film is very, very tight and it moves very quickly. Oh, geez, what else? Okay, so you guys will appreciate this. The big reveal with Kylo Ren when he unmasks himself in the interrogation with Rey. I myself and some other people feel like that part was kind of a, like, it really let off a lot of steam as far as like the tension that was building up with him and the overall vibe. And it kind of like it brought him down to earth for me. You know what I mean? Like he stopped being this really imposing big bad dude. Uh-huh. And then he just kind of like turned into this like emo Sithling. And
I kind of felt like he was like that. I mean, he literally used a line early on in the film. I'll show you the dark side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was this, even the solidifying of what JJ had been setting up of this kid is not a Jedi master. He is no right. Darth Vader. He is honestly somebody who might not even be a Dark Lord. I mean, he's talking about struggling with the light side and, mm-hmm. and those kind of things. I thought the reveal was a little overly done. You know, like, oh, who's behind the mask? When it's like, well, he's not going to be scarred. He's not going to have all this other stuff. And they glazed over the Han Solo's son thing, which is really cool. I liked how he handled that because your father, Han Solo, he's here. He's like, ah, that means nothing to me. But then they, like, take a full 30 seconds to actually take the mask off.
And like, yeah.
Why? Why didn't he just come in without it? That would have been more interesting to me than the takeoff.
Well, see, now, my thought is that I think the best time to do the big reveal would have been on the bridge.
Yeah.
If he had because he didn't really have a point.
Right. And if he does it on the bridge, because he does it again on the bridge anyways.
Yes.
If he does it on the bridge, now we see that at that moment, at this crowning moment in this film, we see that he is a child, essentially. You know, I mean, he's a man child.
Yeah.
And that he is weak. And his will is wavering. I mean, I don't think any of us didn't see what was about to happen coming during that dialogue.
Right.
It was pretty strongly telegraphed. But I think if he had taken the mask off for the first time then, and then they talk, and, you know, Han is showing his softer side, which is something that he doesn't usually do, like, it would have been a very powerful moment, that more powerful than it already is. And it was already a good moment.
Yeah.
But I think it would have made Ren a better character up to that point. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just gonna say, I think JJ did a really good job of tying him back to Anakin. He's definitely his grandfather's grandson, especially the way they portrayed him in the prequels. I mean, Luke was a little bit whiny, you know, in episode four, but Hayden Christensen that's the exact same character that he played. And I was actually okay with the early reveal. My problem with it goes to, I think as soon as that death happens on the bridge, that mask goes back on and you never see it come off again, because that's when he becomes Kylo Ren. He stops being Ben at that point. And I think it would have carried more weight then, because he's wavering throughout the movie. He's having that battle with the dark and the light. So I'm okay with the reveal happening earlier. But then once he turns on that lightsaber for the last time, I think that's when the mask needs to stay on.
I don't know that that's going to be the last time, because here's the thing.
No, I just mean...
He's saying in theory if you did that, yeah.
Yeah. So playing into that whole scene, there are seeds that are planted. There's at least three seeds that are planted in this whole thing of Kylo Ren leaving the dark side and, you know, becoming a light-sided Jedi. One was when Han's talking to Leia and I saw her son, did blah, blah, that whole thing. And she goes, you can save him. He goes, well, you know, Luke's a Jedi master. How, you know, he goes, yeah, but you're his father. So that was seed number one. You're his father. You can get through to him, which is a very real life thing. The second seed was, I don't have a better way to describe it. Basically when he's praying to Vader, right? He's monologuing to the helmet, which was an okay scene. If they hadn't revealed that in the previews, it would have been better, I think, the helmet being there. But how he's himself talking about he's struggling with the call to the light. I mean, you never hear that in Anakin, ever, or in Vader. Now, he loved his son and the family. See, that even plays back. Vader saved Luke because of the father-son bond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though they didn't raise together, they didn't do this. there was a bond there, a family thing. The family is strong in the family. You know, I know the Force is strong in the family, but the family is strong in the family here. But he's talking about how the light is calling to him, which is a whole different thing than we've ever seen. It's always been the dark side pulls you over. The dark side pulls you over. The dark side pulls you over. This was, he chose the dark side. The light side's pulling him. So that was a seed. And then the last seed, I think, was when Han looks him in the eye. Or, you know, they're having that heartfelt speech. And I knew. I'm like, come on, Han, you're smarter. But I know what you're doing. You're actually putting, you're making yourself vulnerable to be his father. You're putting yourself out there like you never have before. And, of course, as soon as he left the safety of the rails, like, he's effing dying. This mm-hmm. sucks, man. Mm-hmm. Stay with the rail. God damn it. Listen to Chewie. Stay back. All right. Yeah. But so you, the look in his eye is the third scene. Or third seed, when that fucking lightsaber comes blasting through him, and had I been in a theater where people were clapping and cheering, you would have got me screaming at the damn screen at that point. But being that it was a nice, quiet, I was able to retain it. But it's like, yeah, that was horrible. But the acting was so amazing there, because he just looks in his eye, never changes to hate, never changes to surprise. He knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. And he just, you know, kind of touches his face and then falls. That's the third seed that they can mm-hmm. plausibly bring Kylo Ren to the light side for the third movie. Not in the second movie, but in the third movie, I think.
How heartbreaking was the moment when he touches his face?
God, that's right? It. He touched all of our faces with that. We'll never see Han Solo again, man.
Well, he's in the next film.
Season finale of season one of Flash took me right back there, that exact same set of
powerful moment.
Yeah.
Now here's the thing, we do know that he's in the next film, by the way. Mm-hmm. Harrison is, we don't know if it's flashbacks. J.J. Abrams, if you listen to this, if you mother truckers try to bring him back in any actual capacity, the community will rage and you will not be safe anywhere.
I don't know. Clones are a thing, man.
No. if they try to bring him back, because it'll completely rob that moment of all of its authenticity, and it'll make everything else lack authenticity for them. Mm-hmm.
Bouncing off of that, I agree. But bouncing off of that, I think we learned more about the Force in any other film here, because, you know, Darth Vader was this badass that couldn't hardly be touched, right? But he mm-hmm. was 100% void of emotion until he found his son and it started to seep back in a little bit. But that was the thing here. Han is falling and Kylo Ren's watching him, and all of a sudden he gets shot by mm-hmm. Chewbacca. Who telegraphed it by yelling at him? And then that was a great moment.
Yeah. Well, it's Chewie, man. Okay, yeah. So in the expanded universe, again, this is the thing that I brought up with a lot of my friends. I said that my heart breaks a lot during that scene, but my heart breaks the most when you see Chewie do his battle roar and he shoots Ben Solo.
Yeah.
He's not shooting Kylo Ren. No, well, now not. He is, but he's shooting at Ben Solo. He's shooting at his best friend, his life mate, the person he's sworn a life debt to. He's shooting his son. And in the expanded universe, he always extended his life debt to Leia and the kids as well.
Right.
He considered all of Han's family part of his life debt. And that just, dude, and you just see him for the whole rest of that film. He's shattered, man.
Yeah.
He is a husk right now. The way he looks at Rey at one point, I'm just like, oh, no, Chewie, stop. Rage out and kill some more stormtroopers so I don't feel so bad right now. I really need you to be strong for me.
Yeah. And then he didn't even wait for everybody to get clear from the building. He's like, fuck it. And he hit the button.
That was the other thing.
He was pissed.
Yeah. I mean, and I will say this, in that scene, and then when he starts shooting like that, I laughed a little bit because I was reminded of the, what is the name of that film? A Vector Prime. Book. Yeah. Expanded Universe book, written by Bob Salvatore, when he kills Chewbacca because Lucasfilm said you need to kill a major character. We really, really want a major character to die because we want this to feel important. We want people to realize that this is a big moment in the Expanded Universe stuff. And he was allowed to basically choose who it was going to be, and he chose Chewie because he felt like Chewie was the best candidate and would have the most heroic going out. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And he essentially has, like, I can't remember if it's a spaceship or it's a spaceship.
It's a moon. It's a moon.
Or a moon. Yeah, it's a moon. Yeah. Basically dropped on it.
Serpendal. Yeah.
While he's throwing Han and Leia's kids into the ship, but I turned to my roommate afterwards when we walked out, and I was like, "Well, I guess Bob Salvatore's off the hook now," because people raged at him about killing Chewbacca, but he was basically, they hired him as a hitman. Like, they're like, "You got to take this guy out. We trust that you'll do it in like the best way possible," and he did a really good job. But that's true. Besides.
That's a testament to how well he wrote that death, because of how mad people were.
Oh yeah, totally. It was the most heroic death possible. He had a flipping moon dropped on his head. Come on. Like, come on. But yeah, no, I mean, that part was great. And then, okay, so following the big Han scene, we get the battle in the forest between Finn, Rey, and Kylo Ren. And I said when we talked about this in the past, I said, I really want to see some primal savage lightsaber action.
Yeah.
I don't want to see, you know, Disney on ice pirouetting and all that business like we saw in the prequels. I want to see brutal lightsaber fights like we saw in Empire and like we saw in Jedi, where with people who are relatively untrained, yeah, who are passionate, who are embracing their emotion. That's what I was hoping for. And that's what we got, man. I was blown away. I love the fact that they both got to use the lightsaber and fight him. I love the fact that there was battle damage on both sides. Everybody's getting messed up left and right. Mm-hmm. I thought that was fantastic. I like the fact that they... go ahead.
Sorry, they brought in... You know how they had the little halberd? The handle that sticks out. What's that called?
The crossguard?
Yeah, the crossguard. Of course, on Kylo Ren's, the crossguard is actual lightsaber material. Mm-hmm. And how they actually used that. He like drilled into Finn's shoulder with it.
Mm-hmm.
That was really cool.
Yep.
So I carry
and horrible.
And horrible. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That would hurt like hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Like, oh, man. He just, like, all of that, though. Like, because the thing is, on paper, neither Finn nor Rey can fight Kylo Ren one-on-one and win.
Right.
Even though he's not necessarily a full Sith Lord or a full Jedi or a Jedi Master or anything like that, he's had training, right, and he's been doing this for a while. However, when you factor in Chewbacca shoots him with the bowcaster, which has already been illustrated as being an obscenely powerful weapon.
Yeah.
They spend at least two scenes earlier in the film showing just how powerful the bowcaster is.
Yes.
You know, he gets hit by that in the hip there, or lower abdomen.
Yeah.
And then he's fighting Finn, and Finn manages to get a couple slashes in on him, just, you know, grazes or whatever. But, you know, that's wearing him down. He's pounding on the wound spot and everything to, you know, to bolster himself up. And then he fights Rey. And I am going to go full-blown F-bomb here, so cover your ears, kids. She fucks him up.
Yeah.
And I loved it because, you know, she's coming into her power with the Force.
Partially because of his fault, too.
Oh, yeah.
All that totally. Force probing, I think, brought a reaction out.
Oh, it? Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. And plus the inspiration of what he just did to Han, who she's forming a relationship with, who she cares about. You know, like they formed a bond. Han doesn't form bonds casually with people. You know what I mean? No. He hates everybody, but he likes her.
Why do you think that? Do you think this is a younger? Obviously they're not twins, because Kylo Ren would know he had a sister, and nothing was mentioned. But do you think it's a younger sister he doesn't know about, or is this Luke's kid?
I'm so completely up in the air on that. I could go either way, honestly. I can't make it a fight at all.
I can't express an opinion with certainty, but I will say this, because Callum, our good friend Callum, asked me, and I told him, I said, if we find out that she is Han and Leia's daughter, I will be seriously pissed off, because I don't think you can, in fairness, present this entire film the way you just did and not have either of them mention having a daughter.
Uh-huh. I don't know, man. It took what was it? The episode 5 before Luke found out he's the son of Darth Vader.
Yeah, but that's
like you have the parents there just straight not acknowledging her.
Exactly. While they're talking about the other son that has fallen. Uh-huh. And I also don't believe that either Han or Leia would abandon their daughter on Jakku without some kind of ward. Like, well, some kind, or
she was in the flashback, she's left with a ward. We don't know what happened, but but there's right. somebody holding her back. So, so mind cannon, right? I could go into that. This could be a younger sister that Kylo doesn't know about. And when the Sith hit the fan and he went nuts and, you know, messed up whatever Luke was doing and presumably killed people. I mean, that's one of the flashes you see, I think, is either a future flash or it's what happened. Of course, she wasn't there, but she got it through the lightsaber. I could see them hiding that because that was their family line, right? They were raised separately without knowing their parents, been told their parents were dead. Luke and Leia were, rather. So I could see that being an acceptable thing. And the way they responded to her so quickly, it kind of – she has to be either their daughter and they're not saying something, or I'm thinking maybe they're setting up to be some kind of Luke's child or something.
Well, that's – yeah, my thought is either she's Luke's child or she is – just she'll be somebody in the storyline, but just a new branch of force sensitive people coming to be again, you know what I mean? Because that's kind of the whole thing. What,
like, supposedly Vader didn't have a father?
He's not force being, he just means the next generation of force sensitive.
The next generation, because right. in theory, here, okay, so from the expanded universe stuff, we know that there's various levels of force sensitivity. Some people are just sensitive. Some people are capable of becoming Jedi. You see that in, like, the video games and the books and everything.
Even Leia, she's right. sensitive to it.
Exactly.
But she's not.
Because she senses Han's death right. when he dies. And they have no way to know that he died right then.
Right.
Because none of those people were communicating at the time.
No. Right. Right.
So here's the thing, though. They, with Attack of the Clones, they exterminate like 90%, if not higher, of all the Jedi and Force-sensitive people in the universe. Or so they say, right?
So they say.
That's the idea, though. They're trying to completely eradicate people who are capable of manipulating the Force, so on and so forth.
Only for the light side, apparently. Because dark side people keep
popping
up.
No.
It should have been dark side.
The Sith mandate is that there's always one master and one apprentice, though.
That's right. That's right.
So they always seek to exterminate competition. You know, that's the other thing, because they consolidate their power.
I gotcha.
So now, here in theory, if the Force is this energy that binds us and is everywhere, it has to have vessels, right? To influence events and everything. So I think at some point, new lines of people who are sensitive have to prop up, you know,
agreed.
Whether it's midichlorians or some other ridiculous thing, you know, so I'm thinking, like, I think it would be best if Rey wasn't part of the bloodline, because then it shows that the Force is recovering from what was done.
I could see that, I guess.
You know what I mean?
It just felt like there was something more to it. I mean, Han took to her so fast. Leia looked at her, I think, slightly differently.
Well, and now that's the thing. With the Force has its way, you know?
That's true.
It pushes people together. There's a great book series that I love, Stephen Erickson's Malazan Book of the Fallen. It's a fantasy, epic fantasy series. One of his core themes is convergence, in that power draws power. And that it's not quite as fuzzy, happy-feely as I'm implying with the Force here, but his concept is that people are drawn together because they're powerful and because people seek to consolidate power, and people of similar caliber tend to gravitate to each other. I believe the same thing happens here with the Force, is that it's going to pull these powerful people together, these important people together, because it needs to, because that's how things happen. You know what I mean?
Well, they keep talking about a balance. And that was the thing. They literally said, if there's no light side to balance the dark side, then there's no balance.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Period.
Yeah. So now this is all a ton of headcanon, but
yeah,
it's fun to think about. And so at least we get some of that stuff to think about. But,
we have to, like, I want to go back to old EU as much as the next person does. Mm-hmm. And that even we don't even understand the rule of two anymore once you start factoring in rebels and inquisitors and that and all that. So it's kind of hard to wrap your head around the rule of two as we know it is not how Palpatine did it, and who knows how the First Order and Snoke are
doing. Right.
So let's jump back to some earlier parts in the film and address the whole stormtrooper thing. What do you guys think about? I picked up on it instantly. When he pulled his helmet off, I don't know why. I just knew, I was like, they're conscripting people into their army.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that little?
Is it because
twist?
He wasn't a New Zealand man?
He wasn't Jango Fett again. No, I mean, I knew that was going to happen ahead of time. It was just the way things were. I don't know. I just kind of got this idea of conscription versus clones. Maybe I caught something in some previews. I don't know exactly what stuck in my mind.
It makes sense.
Yeah, in the expanded universe stuff, they eventually start phasing out clones because they realize that there's problems with them, particularly in the fact that you have hundreds of thousands of people who have the exact same personality, basically.
Right. And, well, in the cartoon, of course, they started messing with that, right?
They deviate because that's human nature, right? We deviate.
Right. But the cost factor alone, I mean, the Empire, it wasn't even the Empire did it. It was the Republic that did it originally. But I can't remember the actual cost. I don't remember if they gave a number in the...
It's irrelevant, but it's expensive.
Yeah, it's very expensive.
I'm sure it pales in comparison to the cost of one Death Star, let alone a second, but I digress.
Right. Or let alone a third.
Dude, did you catch the name of the planet?
Yeah, Starkiller Base.
Starkiller! That's a great nod to Force Unleashed, because that was the apprentice of Darth Vader was Starkiller.
Well, but in fairness, it could also be just a nod to... the original Star Wars. That was what it wasn't supposed to be. Skywalker, the original family name,
right?
Starkiller. Yeah. So either way, I mean, because the game is a nod to that,
right?
So,
right. Okay, let's talk about this for a second. Would you guys agree with the statement that if anybody tries to have the Empire build another spherical doomsday weapon, you're going to flip your lid?
I don't care if it's spherical or not. Doomsday weapon scenario needs to be done. It needs to file it. Done.
I would not be angry if they moved forward with other ways of doing things.
See,
and Snope, it wasn't him that really wanted it, it seemed like, because the guy was like, our weapon's almost ready. He's like, fine, go over, see the preparations. But he's really focused on, get me this map, get me the Jedi stuff. Uh-huh. So I think it was one of those, the Empire carried on. To me, grain of salt here with what I'm about to say. I understand it's a fictional universe, but real life moments apply in this universe to the rules of the universe, and real life dictates that you follow a leader. And when the leaders are gone, other leaders might step up, but they're not the same people. They don't have the vision. So you just keep doing what you were doing before. I mean, that goes throughout the history of mankind in our own universe. So I think it plays well in this one, is that, hey, they didn't know what to do. So they just made a bigger, better gun than before, because that apparently was the problem, was the gun was too small. That's kind of my theory on it. That's why I actually liked it. I love that as an actual planet. That was really cool as shit.
Yeah.
But I would not be mad if they tried it again. But I don't think they will, because I think we're going to be following Snope and more of that and less of the Empire / First Order.
I kind of like, I'm just like, I'm tired of the Death Star run. Mm-hmm. If you follow me, you know what I mean? Like, we've done it in 3 films now.
Yep.
Where we have to attack this base.
Yeah, this
it has
never
a vulnerability.
Ends well.
Right. Well, it has a vulnerability, and we're going to attack it, and we're going to lose a lot of fighters in the process. And then something's going to happen where we save the day and we blow up the whole thing. I think it would have been a little bit better if the weapon had been disabled or destroyed, but that the base and the planet itself wasn't, so that they still had their foothold. You know what I mean? Going forward, but they lost their capability of just destroying planets.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, too. I think we're missing the point a little bit. Almost a distraction. See, here's the thing about J.J. Abrams. Go watch his TED Talk. If you want to understand his movies a little bit deeper, go watch his TED Talk. He talks about the mystery box. And his whole thing is the mystery is the mystery. It's almost like Schrodinger's cat. When you open the box, you know what's in it. But until you do, it can be all these different things. And he uses virtual sleight of hand in all of his stuff that he does. And I think that's what he's doing here is we keep going. I mean, Finn got First Order. Everybody's like, oh, the First Order. But really? The big bad guy is Snope, and he's only using the Snoke.
Yeah, with a K.
Okay.
Snopes is the website that debunks internet.
They debunk internet rumors and use the Force. I'm just saying. Snoke. But he's using the First Order as a tool. You notice that he Kylo, you see how they talked to Kylo Ren, how he talked to them? It was not Darth Vader's the head of the Empire and the Emperor's there. It wasn't that at all. It was, we're doing our thing over here, and we're just using these guys because they're there and we can't. It's what I got it from it.
I really loved that part because, for example, in Star Wars Old Republic, there's a kind of narrative thread where the Sith look down on the military and the military look down on the Sith. They see them as like, you know, being like radical, just, you know, crazies. Like they just see them as being like fanatical religious zealots that and they're getting in the way of the true order that is going to be established by the military and vice versa. You know, the Sith see them as just simpletons and, you know, plebs. Basically,
that could easily play here.
So there's animosity, even though the Sith have, you know, have full command essentially, and they can pretty much order the military around. I saw that same thing here. You can tell that Kylo Ren is the superior and gets what he wants, but ultimately he's not a supreme commander.
Oh no,
he's not the tactical leader here,
dude. I called him by his first name, called him Kylo, and basically threw him under the bus twice.
Yeah,
you know, there's no respect there.
Well, and that's kind of the thing that I liked about that is I felt like that was almost a nod to the old EU because that's similar to the relationship that Vader and Tarkin had in EU was this constant struggle, this power struggle between who was number two. And we got to see it. We get to see this play out in the movie universe now.
Who does number two work for?
Yeah, totally. I agree. A shout out, though, for Domhnall Gleeson there, the guy who played the general.
Yeah.
The redhead guy. He's had an awesome year. Interesting fact, he was in Ex Machina, the movie about AI technology that came out earlier this year that did really well. Also, interestingly enough, Poe Dameron,
Oscar Isaac.
Oscar Isaac was in that film with him too. There's only basically three actual people in that movie, and two of them were in episode 7. So that's pretty wild and crazy. Also, interestingly, Oscar Isaac is Apocalypse in the new X-Men movie, which is also crazy. So these I think we're seeing a new generation of like superstars just kind of kick off from here,
which is the way Star Wars is supposed to be.
I agree. I totally agree. I mean, Daisy Ridley is going to be the hotness. I mean,
she's Sharon Carter. She is Sharon Carter. I can see through the whole thing. I'm like, oh, Hayley Atwell is amazing as Peggy Carter. She could be Sharon Carter. She has to be Sharon Carter. They have to do that.
I'm done.
Yeah, man.
If it ends up that she's Luke's daughter and they don't make Keira Knightley her mother, an injustice is had. Because I swear, every time she would smile and get that crinkle, all I saw was Keira Knightley.
I noticed that as well. She does. She has a very similar facial structure and she emotes pretty much the same way Keira Knightley does. It's a little unsettling. Yeah. Also, weird little observation about Daisy Ridley is when she runs like a little girl. And you know, the pitter patter thing, like the just kind of trot along, and it's so cute. Like I'm just like, oh, Ray, you're so cute. Like not in it. I'm not trying to like infantilize her or anything like that. I'm just like, you're a genuinely like likable, innocent person who just got thrust into all this crazy stuff, and it's awesome, and it comes through in your mannerisms and everything, even if it was intended or not, which is great. I mean, she's a badass chick too. She takes care of business, which I love.
Oh, her angry face is a really good angry face.
Yeah, it's so fun. And I love her interactions with Finn. I love the scene in the Falcon when she's fixing it for the gas leak, and she's like, that one
I'm pointing at.
Yeah. Their exchange and dialogue was great so often. Yeah. A lot of people have critiqued the film about Finn saying that he's just kind of like the fall guy for all the jokes and the comedic relief and everything. And I'm like, I don't think that's entirely genuine. I just think he is what he is. He's a goofball because he's a kid that was like taken from his family and raised to be a stormtrooper, but he's never really, it seems to me, he's never really clicked with that.
Would that family be the Calrissian family, perhaps?
If that happens, just going to be the cheesiest thing ever.
Oh, come on. Star Wars is a little cheesy, though.
It is, yeah. Well, if every young person in this film ends up being the kid of one of the people from the original trilogy, it'll be too damn far.
Have you ever watched a Disney film or a Marvel film?
No, I know.
No, I hear what you're saying. Here's a theory. I want to string a out there theory for you. So I recently just rewatched episode 6, right? And that's one of my favorites because it's got the Sarlacc pit and, you know, Jabba the Hutt and all this other stuff. And we all assume,
Charles, we know you love Det Bikini.
Mm-hmm.
Although I did notice this time the green chick dancing is pretty much naked. Just so you know, I caught that this time. I've never seen that before. I was like, huh, her boobies just popped out. That's interesting.
Pretty sheer top.
Yeah. And they flash past, but at one point, like, the top shifts sideways. I'm like, huh, they didn't paint all of her. Okay. Anyway, doesn't matter. Boba Fett, you know, we know he dies in the Sarlacc pit, but does he?
Oh.
Does he? Because the word struck with me, and I'm sure you guys haven't read more canon and stuff. You're about to educate me, which would be cool. But just from an outside movie point of view, I want to throw this out there and let you guys run with it. The wording is you get swallowed whole by the Sarlacc and you get digested over 1,000 years. Now he still has his blaster packs and he's got his guns.
I'm going to confirm your suspicions here.
Does he?
As far as EU canon, in the book Tales from Jabba's Palace,
he
does get out of the Sarlacc.
Fuck yeah, man.
Yeah. Because awesome. The Sarlacc slowly digests. What's that?
I said shout out to Dengar.
I don't know what that is, but it sounds funny. Okay, for all of us noobs, what is EU?
Dengar, excuse me. Dengar is one of the other bounty hunters from Empire. Okay. Yeah.
He's the one with all the bandages and the armor.
Yeah.
But they don't say his name, do they?
No, they might not say it.
No, but I think in the movie cards, I think they attribute him in the movie cards.
They did. Yeah, because in the old CCG, he has a card and his ship punishing one. And
You're a fucking nerd.
Okay. EU is Expanded Universe.
Okay, thank you.
Which is the old name for all of the stuff outside of the film canon. It is now all called Star Wars Legends.
Nice.
Which covers everything up till they made the big takeover and the announcement that they were dumping everything. So technically, there is still content and things that belong to that version of the continuity, but it is no longer attached to the official film canon.
Okay, because I knew at one point the books, some of the books were official canon and some weren't, but you're saying once Disney bought it, it became null and void? Or?
It would be the novelizations of the movies were the only ones that were ever actually officially canon. Everything else was, they had different canon tiers, which is what made the EU so convoluted and confusing. Okay. So it was always just the movie tie-in books were the ones that were actual canon because they were based on the movie. Everything else was G-level canon, I believe.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah,
because they've done some wild stuff. Like there was one of the standalone books was a zombie adventure on a Star Destroyer with Han and Chewie, where Chewie gets bitten and is infected as a zombie, and then somehow I forget how he comes out of it.
Oh, something about, that makes me hurt.
Something about Kashyyyki and
I don't remember. I read that.
He's a Kashyyykan time lord who can regenerate. Is that
it? Was
what you're
a
saying?
Good book. It was a fun book because it was really fun to do the whole zombie story in the Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it should never have touched canon. Like, shouldn't have gone anywhere near it. Which canons don't usually have to. moving on.
All right, so we're wrapping up. So what are our final points we want
to
hit?
Well, hold on. We have to talk about the other elephant in the room. How flippin' cool is Poe Dameron?
He's pretty cool.
Okay.
How
Poe Dameron is cool. Finn is cool. Finn and Rey's relationship is cool. But I'll tell you what. If you ever want a case study in good buddy interaction and bad buddy interaction, this movie gave it to you. Both examples. Okay. Poe and Finn are like Rush Hour. Han and Chewie are like Lethal Weapon.
Yes.
Entirely too much comedy when Finn and Poe are together versus Han and Chewie, the right level of Star Wars humor that you're used to. I felt like I was watching him try to do a Marvel movie at some point. So I was like, we don't need to be funny every 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I didn't understand why he and Poe all of a sudden were so close. I mean, he thought Poe died and they get reunited and they're like, I get you being happy, but you met the guy for like 20 minutes total. He got you off the desk, or well, not well, the desk, sorry, but whatever. But
it, okay, the Force works in mysterious ways,
right?
But also the other thing is, I mean, they went through some serious shit together, and as we know from people who've served in the military, and you know, people's experiences at war, even if you're not normally in a unit with somebody, if you go through some shit with them, even if it's a short engagement, you suddenly have a bond that other people just can't understand.
All right.
And you do. My thing was like the TIE fighter. The TIE fighter, and I have to give the TIE, when they're fleeing the Star Destroyer, I have to give that a little latitude, because what that really reminded me was in Vector Prime when Han and Chewie are doing Lando's run. Mm-hmm. And that was just a laugh riot of a chapter, and I loved it because of that. But at one point, I looked at my buddy that was watching the movie with me, with all of their interactions in that TIE fighter. I'm like, did we just become best friends? That's all I can think of when that was going on.
Right. Okay. You're not wrong, but I enjoyed it, and I'm willing to look past it. Sure. As long as it doesn't stay that juvenile going forward.
Yeah.
I want to see their relationship mature. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yeah.
Because I love the scene when they're at the base and they both realize each other are alive. I thought that scene was great.
Yeah.
And they hug. And I feel like that's a really genuine moment from, you know, two guys who never thought they'd see the other guy again. You know what I mean? Like,
they assumed the other one was dead. And,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I don't know. It was off, a little off for me, but it's not saying much.
One thing about the TIE fighter crash, what the hell pulled it into the sand?
She mentioned, okay, so right before that, she talked about the Badlands. Watch for, what did they call it, Chris? The
sinking sand. Sinking or sand. Yeah, it was, that's what it okay. was. Just the natural terrain right. feature.
All I can tell you is it's badass. That's what it was. That was amazing.
Well, see,
scene.
I expected it to be like a Sarlacc or something like that, you know, or some other creature that would like be pulling it in, and then Finn would have to run away, but it wasn't.
Yeah, it was super quick sand.
Yeah, super quick sand. Okay, plot device.
Just watching it go and then it crushed underneath. It's so cool. The practical effects, by the way, amazing. Watching people actually fall from force, watching things blow up in real fashion with real physics.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Watching TIE fighters and X-Wings not disintegrate in the thin air, just pieces everywhere. That was fun. That was amazing.
How did you guys feel about the stormtrooper at Maz's place who had the baton?
I thought that was cool. I thought it was a natural progression of things.
I thought it was cool. I thought that scene was kind of genuine, because if you notice, I noticed this definitely more the second time. He calls him traitor.
Traitor.
Yeah. Yes, he does.
So he knows Finn. Like, you can tell that they're from the same unit, you know, and that he knows who he is. He's seen him without his helmet on and everything. And so, you know, that was a personal battle. But that's so downplayed. That's one of those things where I'm talking about how like very trim this film is, you know, that they have these little elements like that in there, but they're subtle that first time through, and they're not meaty. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is Kylo calls him a traitor later as well.
Right. Yes.
But that I expected a little bit more, because
that's
kinda,
an understatement.
Yeah.
He screams traitor at him later. Yeah.
So I loved that. I love that there were repercussions to the faceless man not being faceless anymore kind of thing. You know what I mean? That was cool.
Okay. Quick moment. Now, I could not get confirmation on IMDb for this first one. And I know Snoke was actually acted out by Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis, yeah.
But I feel like he was based off of Bill Nye, and Bill Nye voiced him. Not Bill Nye Science Guy, Bill Nye English actor.
Oh, Nagy?
Is it Nagy?
Yeah, I think it's Nagy.
No, it's Nye.
Is it Nye?
It is Nye. That's okay. The same. Yeah, it's the same as Bill Nye, the other Bill Nye.
Yeah.
Possibly. I don't know for certain.
But I could not get confirmation on that, but that was what I was thinking.
Yeah, it's entirely possible.
So then the other one was it Captain, was it Fan, how do you say
Phasma?
Phasma is Gwendolyn Christie from Game of Thrones.
Yes, I know. I picked up on the voice instantly. Like, oh, that's so perfect.
We've arrived at one of my only bones of contention that I'm really upset about with this film.
Mm-hmm.
She did not get enough.
No, they didn't really play her up at all.
Yeah, they really downplayed her, and I did not like the way they casually discarded her like trash.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think she'll be back.
Joke. I love the joke, but I don't like the idea of taking a character like that and dumping them in a trash compactor or whatever.
Well, okay, I assume something different. Because she said, they'll break down this room, they'll kill you all. How do we get out of here? I thought as a reference to them getting out by the trash compactor, not throwing her down the trash compactor. That's how I interpreted it. We don't know because they don't show us anything.
In any case, I just didn't like the fact that that was the last time we saw her, and then they blow up the planet. Like, clearly she's not going to be dead. But it's like, come on.
So hopefully she comes back strong. You know, that reminds me of something I picked up in the film, and I want to know, Paul, you, I want to know if you picked up on it or not. But let's go back to Clerks. Let's go back to a Star Wars conversation and the need for contractors. And Rand's line is, do you think the average stormtrooper knows how to install a toilet? Now, is that JJ coming back and saying, yeah, guy, we know how to install toilets?
Oh, man. I think it's probably definitely a reference, but that's great. I did not catch that the first time.
What was your job? Sanitation? What? We'll just use the Force. That's not how the Force works. And then Chewie said, I figured Chewie was going to be saying something that kind of is how it works. He's like, oh, really? You're cold? Lots of great interaction with Chewie and Han. Yes. Lots of great interaction.
I like this.
Oh, it's so good.
I can't borrow that.
Yeah. You can tell when he shot the bowcaster after Chewie got shot. He's like, holy crap, that's awesome. And it makes sense. That's his weapon. You would never pick up somebody else's weapon.
Oh, yeah, totally. I love the little nods to, like, how Chewie's protective of Han, because when they walk into the facility, Han drops his coat on the ground, and then as they're walking out,
Chewie picks it up, yeah.
Yeah, Chewie's like, yo. But the only issue I have with that is, like, Chewie's cold on the surface, right? And they're both wearing jackets, Finn and Han.
Yeah.
And Rey's still wearing her Jakku outfit, and they're running through the tundra, and she's wearing an outfit fit for the desert. I'm like, oh, man, should somebody have given her a coat or something? Like, come on.
Yeah, she's got a Force coat on.
I talked it up to budding Force powers. If the first time she picks up a lightsaber, she can take on somebody that's trained that just knocked her 40 feet away with Force push, then I can suspend belief on the cold
effect. Yeah, I know. It's just one of those little things.
And she absolutely is naturally more powerful than Kylo Ren, because, I mean, I love how they brought that out. No, we kind of do. He was pulling the lightsaber, and he couldn't get it but the wiggle. She ripped it out of the snow.
But
past
you got to remember, like I said before,
he was weakened.
He was weakened. And his now here's another thing from
expanding. That's also Luke's saber, not his. So.
There's also that. The other thing is, you got to remember that from the expanded universe stuff, different people have
different affinities
for how they manipulate the Force. So they, in some cases, like, for example, Vader, if you'll remember from Empire in the big scene on Cloud City when they shoot at him, Han shoots at him, and he absorbs the blaster bolt, you know, bolt.
Right.
That's one of Anakin's powers, is that he can absorb and redistribute energy like that, which some people can do and others can't, you know, in the expanded canon. Some people are really good at telekinesis and some are not. Some are good at telepathy and some are not, you know, all that kind of, like, the manipulation and all that kind of stuff. But,
Fair enough. Speaking of that opening scene where he stops the bolt in midair and it just leaves it to sit there.
That was
cool. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and everybody's just kind of looking at it like, what the crap?
Waiting for it to do something.
And then it does, and they all kind of jump a little bit. Great. And we do have to wrap up. We're running on time. Greatest scene. We'll each have our own favorite scene in the whole movie, okay? So I'll go first. My favorite scene in the entire movie is when Kylo Ren sees that she's escaped, and he's losing his shit, right? And he's beating up the chair, and things are flying out the door, and the two stormtroopers start walking down the hall and stop. One touches the other, and they turn around and walk away. Favorite scene in the movie.
That scene was so great because it's one of those scenes where you see the setup and you're like, all right, if this was like a Marvel movie, this is what would happen. And then he does it. And I was like, this is so great.
Yeah.
And I loved it because it presented stormtroopers as real people for the first time, I think, in the entire series.
I agree.
Which is part of what I think the narrative with Finn is supposed to be about. Yeah. I think we're supposed to realize that these stormtroopers are actually people. They're not just mindless killing machines. I mean, obviously they're not. You know what I mean? So that is one of the first time that, and also the officer in the command room when shit's going pear-shaped and he's like, I'm getting out of here. And the other guy's like, get back to your station. He's like, And he's like, yo, eat one, because, like, we're all going to die if we stay.
Even our general's gone or whatever. I can't remember generals. He called him General so-and-so, but.
General Hux.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, no, I loved that scene. That
so
was
what's
great.
Your favorite scene, Klotz?
Give me a second to think about it. Chris, right. You take it.
Okay, I'll tell you. It was the one that Charles was just talking about with the lightsaber, to pull the lightsaber. But mm-hmm. And I don't know. I leaned over and said it to my friend. I like to think it was a Harry Potter nod. You know, the wand chooses the wizard. And that's exactly what I said. I leaned over to him in the middle of a Star Wars movie, and I said, the wand chooses the wizard, Harry. So that was my favorite scene in the movie.
I think I that whole sequence, that whole battle, I'm not usually a big fan of people getting knocked out and then coming back into the fight later, but I thought it was pretty epic the way it was done with this one. And I just loved, like, the moment that you know that she's ready to assume the power, like, mm-hmm. you know, like, mm-hmm. take it into herself. And, like, because she's been building up to that, you know, like, she's starting to explore it and everything. It's that moment when she wakes back up and she's like, you just hurt Finn. And now I'm going to fight you. Like, I'm not scared of you because I'm going to protect the person I care about. I'm going to protect all the other people I care about. You're a monster. I'm going to destroy you. I loved that. I loved everything about it. And that also talks to one of my favorite things about the whole film is the fact that I've seen a couple of people bring this up. She is a strong feminist character without having to have any kind of signs pointed to it. There's no
right.
There's no cheese. There's no like, oh, we're trying to make a statement here. It's just much like Fury Road with Furiosa, just a badass person who happens to be a woman that doesn't detract in any way from them being just a strong character and having a strong presence in the film.
I think
I loved that.
I agree. I love it. It's so amazing. I think it also points to it because there's Star Wars always has philosophical storylines. It's all intertangled, right? But it's philosophical, mm-hmm. there's personal, and there's political. And I think it showed, if you go back to Anakin and the Republic and how they had this huge governmental process of how Jedis are picked and how they're trained, to the chaos of the fallout of Darth Vader, to Luke Skywalker being hidden on purpose. And then even then, they kind of half training because Yoda was like, oh, you're not ready. He's still set in old ways. To here, well, they're just like, you go, girl. You take it. Mm-hmm. You do. I think it has a little underpinnings of political stuff, too, because the Republic is gone like that. I mean, they didn't even address it. They're just like, boom, done. Like, okay.
Well,
that changes the game.
That's actually another one of the points in the film that we're not entirely sure what happened with. They don't fully explain what the repercussion of the planets that were destroyed were.
Oh, no.
We don't know if that was just a regional hub or if that was like the homeworld.
They said the fleet was gone for
sure. Yeah, because that was what I thought at first. I was like, is that Coruscant? They didn't just take out Coruscant. The ripples didn't seem big enough for that to have been Coruscant.
Well, I don't know. I do know C-3PO specifically says without the fleet, we're doomed. And they mentioned they were taking out the fleet.
Well, that's another thing, too. Okay, so let me address these things before we move to our close.
Sure.
The first issue here we have is that Coruscant? I've been told no, in that it is explained in one of the setup products to this that Coruscant has not joined the Republic yet.
Okay.
Of course, Coruscant has not been turned from its original Galactic Empire loyalties, and that they're a free world or whatever. The other thing is that... We're talking about this group called the Resistance, and then there's the Republic. The idea here is that the Resistance, some people have, you know, put forward the idea that the Resistance is not necessarily directly representative of the Republic, in that they are an independent group that is supported, you know, basically a proxy force.
That's in the pseudo-Stalinesque speech that is given to the troops. He says that. The Republic says one thing, but they know they're secretly siding with the Resistance. So it is, yes, I agree. It's a Resistance is separate from the Republic, but they did have help, I think.
Exactly. And so I think what they were saying is by not having the fleet, that all they had was the starfighters that they had, and they didn't have any capital ships because that local planet was blown up. I think that's the thing. Now, one of my friends pointed out he wants some capital ship action. He wants some hot...
Yes.
Star Star Cruiser on Star Destroyer action. And if there's none of that in the following two films, I'm going to be pretty butthurt. I'm going to throw that out there right now.
But I want some Thrawn for that.
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah, show me some Chiss, man.
Yeah. Hey, before we get too much further away, on that point about Rey and the strong feminist character,
yeah,
that is where you want to look at Max Landis's comments and see it. That's where it directly ties to. So,
okay,
just for some outside reading.
All right, yeah. That's your homework, folks.
And as we go forward with these new movies, I want everybody to keep in mind that we are going to see directors that are not influenced by Flash Gordon and Kurosawa. We are now seeing directors that are influenced by George Lucas. So when you see and when you sense tonal changes and just massive changes from the original trilogy to what we get now, that's why. So we can't look for a good old fashioned Lucas in these.
Right. Well, and that's another thing to tie into the idea of these being very lean films potentially, is that these are modern films being told in the modern method. Yep. And we see it in all the Marvel stuff. We see it in basically any big blockbuster sci-fi or fantasy action film outside of the Lord of the Rings or Star Wars up to this point has been move fast, progressive story, keep everybody interested, because an old school grognard like me who loves all the background stuff and everything like that, that's not everybody. There's a lot of folks who don't give a single shit about any of that, and they just want to have a good time and they want it to be a roller coaster ride that they can follow. So I totally get why they might be pandering to the base audience. But and I say that that's not necessarily an unfair criticism. It's also not necessarily something that they shouldn't do. Yeah. We do want Star Wars to be financially successful. We do want it to be accessible to the masses. That is what, keeps it going. So in the end, it's one of those things that we just kind of have to accept, is that these films are going to be told in the modern way. We're not going to get a Kurosawa film, for example. Hey, I don't know. McFall, I don't know if you have any experience with Kurosawa, but I mean, we're talking
Akira
about
Kurosawa. Yeah.
A soul.
Right. so we're not going to get, old school 3-hour epics. It's just not going to happen, unfortunately. I mean, I would love that, but my hope is that maybe we see some special editions in the vein of the Lord of the Rings ones, mm-hmm. where we get all those scenes that hit the cutting room floor that were worth showing still.
Yeah, let's say director's cut, not special edition, because those tend to have negative connotations in this universe.
Fair enough.
Now, okay, so there's two tones there. I love Akira Kurosawa. I love the depth and the slowness of his movies, and that's great. But when it comes to something as big as Star Wars and as science fiction and so many moving pieces, speaking from almost a filthy casual point of view, I like the tone of this film better than some of the others, because I understood it all and I didn't have to go with extended canon. I didn't have to know all the answers. I know that they'll be filled in at some point. And now I love 4, 5, and 6. Don't get me wrong. And, but there were definitely points in those movies where it's a little too drawn out. Luke's going to find Ben, and then here's some sand people, and here's, they attack. The pacing didn't match the rest of the film to me. It was fast and slow. But
in Empire, Dagobah is a snore fest. I mean, there's some cool moments in there, but it's dude, we are literally trudging through a swamp here. I mean, come on.
And how is that? Apparently, forests hate Jedis. Because, every Jedi that ever goes to the forest, bad juju happens, including Rey, when she runs into Kylo Ren for the first time. She's in a forest, and it's pretty, and all of a sudden you get this sinking feeling something bad's going to happen. So I'm curious about that. Why do forests hate Jedis? What did they ever do to them?
Yeah.
All right. So recommendation is absolutely watch it. I think there's a lot of great canon here. Any last words, gentlemen?
At this point, if they haven't watched it, we've destroyed it for them.
Well, we did it so out of order. There's still things for you to go watch and figure out. Yeah.
Oh, there's still so much more in there that we could do another hour easy talking about different parts. And maybe at some point when the DVD comes around, maybe we will.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't talked about Daniel Craig or Bill Hader being in the movie.
Oh. What? Yeah, well, we'll talk about that afterwards, McFall. In any case, I do want to share with everybody a phrase a good friend of mine coined, my good friend Mr. Johnny Patches, called Kylo Ren Darth Millennial. And I think it fits pretty well.
Yeah.
Also, there's apparently a Twitter account out right now called Emo Kylo Ren. So if you want to go have some laughs, check that out. But in closing statement for myself, I love the film. I will probably see it again in theaters at least once more. I can't wait for it to come out on DVD, Blu-ray, all that goodness. And I hope to hear some feedback from you guys out there. Tell us what you thought, because that's the fun of Star Wars, is talking about Star Wars, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. I think it's fair to say, may the Force be with you. We'll be back again next time.